Hello, everyone. Welcome back inside the studios at KATE 1450. We're taking this time without sports going on to catch up with some former sports figures from around the area. And today we got a good one. Neil Pierce, a big, big part of Alden Conger sports for a long time, member of the Minnesota Interscholastic Athletic Administration's Hall of Fame, member of the Minnesota High School Baseball Coaches Association Hall of Fame. Neil, we thank you for taking the time to talk to us for a little bit. I've been starting these interviews and ending them with the same question. So we'll start with our first question. With no sports going on, it's led to a lot of people having a 3-4 hour time slot every day where they'd usually been watching games to have, well, try and find something else to do. What have you been doing to fill the void? What have you been doing in your free time without sports?
Well, not a whole lot. A lot of watching movies on television. I try to get my daily walk in every day, and otherwise just playing with the cats. But, Nate, I did see 9 twin spring training games. I went to Florida back in late January, and I usually do that for a number of years now. So I was planning on staying 2 months, but after about 6 weeks, they started shutting everything down. And I thought, well, boy, oh, boy, what if they shut the airlines down? How am I going to get home? That type of thing. So I came home about 2 weeks early, but I enjoyed seeing those 9 games and watching a lot of the practices and so forth.
You're probably one of the few people around here who was able to say they got to see some Twins baseball this year. How long have you been doing that?
Oh, I think this was the 21st year.
No, so they know you well down there by now. All right.
They do. I mean, we got things worked out down there. We got the best parking spot in the whole parking area and get to know a lot of the workers and so forth. And, yeah, it's fun, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And the warm weather, I'm sure, doesn't hurt in the middle of January either. Get a nice little tan going.
Well, you know, and I'm losing my tan. I haven't worn shorts for 3-4 weeks.
Everyone's in their PJs right now, staying inside. It'll have to take some readjusting for sure once things, hopefully sooner than later, get back to normal. Well, Neil, I want to start by asking you just to kind of give us a layout of your background in sports. And when we talked on the phone yesterday getting ready to do this, you mentioned how there's a whole lot on that resume. But if you could just real quick give us a quick little rundown of how you got involved in sports all the way back to when you were young playing even, and then, of course, your experience with Alden Conger going through. What is your sports story, I guess? And again, just try to keep it within a few minutes for us here. I know there's a lot going on with you.
Okay. I had 2 brothers who were very athletic also. We played sports all the time, and the neighborhood kids. We played outside whatever season it was. Football in the fall, baseball in the spring, basketball indoors. If we had to, we had hoops outside, and we constantly played to the point where we got to be fairly good, and we played high school sports. All 3 of us played all 3 sports, football, basketball, and baseball, and I know when I was a senior, our team won all the activities in the Border League, football, basketball conference, baseball. And our basketball team ended up 18-5 that year and got to district finals against Austin. And back then, Austin was the power in the state of Minnesota in most sports. And they beat us, obviously, but they played the state tournament in basketball about every year. And we also did well in football and baseball, and I went on then to go to Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, and there I played basketball and baseball. My basketball coach was Whitey Skoog, who was quite well known in basketball circles. He was an All-American at the university. His number is retired and hanging in the rafters at Williams Arena, and he also went on to play for the Minneapolis Lakers. And they won the NBA championship about, I think, 3 years while he was playing. He played with, like, 4 Hall of Famers, including George Mikan, Slater Martin, Vern Mickelson, and I think maybe Jim Pollard, too, as well as the coach, John Cunla. And I had a chance to talk to Whitey a number of times about his experience And one interesting thing I asked him, and Tom Jones was with me, went up there, took him out for dinner one day, and we just talked Laker basketball primarily. And one of the questions I had for him, I said, you know, watching the Lakers back in the 50s and early 60s, I said, I never saw anybody dunk the ball. Couldn't they? Oh, he said, that's another story. He said, those guys could easily dunk the ball. But he said they didn't because they thought it was showing off. Today, now, in the NBA, about every other basket's a dunk. But many interesting stories. So that was a lot of fun. And then after college, I went on and I got my one and only job at Alden Conger here. And I started out coaching B-Squad basketball and varsity baseball. And I coached the B-Squad for 2 years, and then I got promoted to the varsity, which I continued to do for 15 years. And baseball, I coached for 33 years, and I was athletic director 36 years. I had some good teams in both sports. Basketball, I think, won 5 conference championships in 15 years, and we had never other second, third place finishes. The Border League back then was very competitive. It had a 8-team league, and you never believe it, but towns like Frost and Delavan and Elmore had, and Emmons had wonderful teams, and they were very competitive also. And one nice thing about it was the travel distance. The furthest trip we had to make was Elmore, 40 miles. And today, they go many miles past that, sometimes over 100, to play a basketball game. A lot of comparisons to when I played and when basketball is played now is that back when I played, there are a lot of different rule changes. For example, we were limited to 18 games. Today, they play about 23. The three-point shot was not instituted until about 1984, so we didn't have that. And the games are longer. The games are longer by 8 minutes today as opposed to when we played. We played 4 8-minute quarters. Now there's two 18-minute halves for 36 minutes. But even though we did not have all the clinics and camps and summer basketball, we still had outstanding teams. And I think it's because we just went out and played the game a lot. Nobody directed us when we were younger. Nobody coached us. We just learned the game by playing it. And that was a lot of fun. Coaching-wise, we have many outstanding players. Of course, oftentimes it isn't the coach that makes the team, it's the players that make the coach. Same in baseball. We had some outstanding players, and we had some many, many championship teams. And we got into the regionals a number of times. We missed going to the state tournament twice on two occasions. And back then, a lot of those years, there's one class in the whole state. And so we'd end up playing Austin again, and we gave them tough games, but they would beat us because, you know, they were the best in the state. And we had a lot of kids who went on to play college baseball, and that's why I guess I love baseball. I like to go to Florida to watch them play and practice and also for the weather. But I've been in sports, you know, my whole life pretty much, either playing, coaching, spectator, a fan. And there are a lot of stories I could relate, but you maybe have more questions for me, Nate.
Well, I do. I want to go back a little bit just to your days playing at Gustavus. I mean, playing under Whitey Skoog, he's a guy you mentioned, played with Minnesota 3 times, was on an All-American team, went on to be a 3-time NBA champion. When you get there and start learning under him, what was the jump from just the college basketball or high school basketball days to the kind of knowledge and work ethic and things that he instilled out there, just with the amount of knowledge in basketball that that guy had?
Oh, yes, he had a tremendous knowledge. And Whitey was a very low-keyed person, and I guess I am too. I mean, rarely did he get upset, you know, during the game and get technical fouls and that type of thing. I got one technical foul in 17 years. But anyway, it was really interesting, you know, to have a professional be your coach and show us how he could still show us how to do things because he was still young enough. And, he had a lot of respect from the players. And like I said, he's very knowledgeable, and he'd been through the basketball wars. And I think we ran a lot of the same offenses that he had played under. And he was a great guy. He's also my student advisor, so I knew him quite well.
What led you to want to become a coach? A lot of people play a lot of different sports throughout their youth, and then that's it for them. They're a fan for the rest of their life. It takes something a little different to have that kind of motivation to want to be able to lead both a team and a whole bunch of young men, women, boys, and girls, too. What led you to want to pursue that?
Well, that's kind of an interesting question, too. When I was a senior in high school, they didn't have a junior high coach. So they asked me if I would like to coach them. Well, now we could only coach them and play games on games when the varsity had a night game. So I was free in the afternoon. So I would practice with them. And then on our game days for us at home, I would take them and we'd have games. And I saw those kids improve so much from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. And it was a lot of fun. I thought, you know, this is something I might like to do. And so that's one of the things that got me going in that. Plus, I loved athletics and sports. I had a brother, Gabby, who also was a coach. He coached both basketball and baseball. A lot of that at Bryceland and a little bit at the USC. And then he got out of that and went into another business. So, yeah, we've been in sports since we're almost old enough to walk.
Coaching as a senior in high school, a junior high team, I mean, that's something that's definitely, I guess, big lesson, a chance to learn a lot about just not just coaching but leading in general. I mean, what was some of the things that you took away from that going in? What were some of the things that you learned just going forward? Obviously you'd go on to coach a lot more, but what were some of the values that you take out of that experience so young too with those kids?
Well, you know, I knew those kids because a lot of them were kids from town, and I knew them pretty well, and they knew me, and you know, we got along real well, but everything went smoothly. We didn't have a lot of kids on the team. I think there's maybe 7 or 8 or something like that. And there's little or no parent involvement back then, but everybody was happy. The kids were starting to win games, and it's interesting. We played Wells, I think, 3 times that year. The first 2 times they beat us, and the last time we beat them, and that's a team that went on to play in the state tournament. And that was real, real fulfilling and good experience for me. And I think that's one of the reasons I went on to take up coaching.
You mentioned you had one technical foul in 17 years. What was it that set you off?
I don't remember what set me off. I know who gave it to me. Paul Earhart. Paul was a wrestling coach at Elberlee, and I knew Paul. And I don't know, maybe things weren't going right. Basically, I stood up and said something. It wasn't derogatory necessarily, but he was at his wit's end, and he just teed me up.
All right, okay. Now, I want to ask you, now I had my notes here. You were the athletic director for a while over at Alden, too, yes?
36 years.
Right, okay. So I just want to ask, a lot of people see the athletic director side just from being a parent, a fan, or a player. What's something about the position and the work that goes into it that you feel is either underappreciated, something that people don't understand about it, and just something like that, something that's kind of under the surface that you think people don't usually get to see that is misunderstood about how difficult it is to work that job?
Well, there's so much work behind the scenes. I don't know how it is today, but back when I did it, and the last year I did it was 2000, I mean, there was so much responsibility. Your whole life was based on a schedule. I mean, you scheduled the games, you scheduled the umpires and referees, you scheduled the buses, and people assume that just happened. And no, there was somebody that had to do all that and to get the rosters out and make schedules for the next year. And I will say that all my years, I just had two occasions when officials did not show up. One was a wrestling official, and I called him. He lived in Austin. I won't mention his name. And anyway, I said, say, you're supposed to be over here tonight refereeing a wrestling meet. I am? He said, yeah, I've got a contract on you. Oh, let me go check. Let me go check. So he goes and checks, and he says, by God, you're right. I'll be right over. And in the meantime, the varsity coach refereed the B-squad match, and he made a varsity time. And the other time, I had two sets show up.
No.
I said, oh, my. Did I goof up? So I checked my contracts, and I had a contract for one of the officials, but the other set, I said, I do not have a contract with you. So they're thinking, where are we supposed to be? Well, I said, if you got a contract at home that I've signed, we will pay you. But they never came back and asked for money, so they must have gone to the wrong town. And that can happen, too, because they're going out 2-3 times a week in some cases. But, athletic director is a job where there's not much praise, but there's a lot of criticism. Things don't go right. Oh, the bus didn't show up. Oh, we went to the wrong town. You know, referees didn't show up. This type of thing. And there's somebody behind all that. And it's a job that you don't receive a lot of credit for.
Now, you coached multiple sports, Neil. I just want to ask, what's the difference in how you approach the different sports as far as just not the actual on-the-field things, but how you deal with players? Is there a difference in kind of the mindset going from one sport to another in how you approach different things in different sports?
No, I treated them pretty much the same. I would tell them, I said, be to practice on time. Your time is no more important than my time and your teammates' time. There's no reason to be late. Get here in time. Give me 100% at all instances, and be a good teammate. And I said, the main thing you're responsible for here in school is your grades. If you're ineligible academically, you don't do us any good. And for the most part, things went pretty good. Didn't have much problem with athletes. I had a lot of good kids. And you treat them well and with respect, they'll do the same thing.
Neil, you've had a whole lot of experience just throughout sports at pretty much every different kind of position. In your mind, what's the biggest key to being able to have the kind of success that you had both as a player younger and then later on as a coach?
Well, I think it's hard work. You know, work hard at your sport. Work at it during the off season. Back then, we didn't do a lot of weights. We sure played a lot of ball. I mean, whether it's just a couple guys going out and playing wiffle ball in the backyard, or shooting baskets, or throwing the football around, playing 4-on-4. That's what it takes. Is just a lot of hard work and a good attitude. And being a good teammate. You know, I told kids, I said, you don't have to like people off the court, but you got to work with them on the court or on the field. And I also did coach junior high football for about 12 years. So I think altogether I probably had close to 70 seasons that I coached here.
It's a whole lot, Neil, and we thank you for taking the time to talk to us a little bit here on KATE Radio. I mentioned before we ask people the same first question when we do these and also the same last question as well. You mentioned you've been watching a lot of movies. So while there's no sports to actually watch right now and people are looking for stuff to do while they're all cooped up in their homes, what's a recommendation for a book, movie, TV show, sports-related or not, that you recommend to everyone else out there?
Oh, my, that's pretty good. My wife and I like to watch Westerns, and we also like to watch sports-related movies. And as far as books, I'm reading one here right now. It's called Facing Ted Williams, and it talks about that players who played against Ted Williams and what they thought of him. I met Ted Williams once, and I met a lot of the stars. I got a story for you if you got time.
Always.
1965, I was playing for the Albert Lee Colonels, and we had a chance to play the Kansas City Monarchs. It was a traveling team of black players, and that goes back to the Negro Leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we booked them to play us in Albert Lee. And drew a nice crowd, and Satchel Paige, for an extra $50, would pitch three innings. We thought, that's a no-brainer. That's what people want to see. And so we paid him $50, and Satchel went out to the mound. And now he's about 60 years old, give or take. And he basically threw underhand. It's almost like slow-pitch softball. And, okay, we go up to the plate. And in three innings, we got a grand total of one hit. And we're thinking, geez, that's terrible. But, you know, it's like you tried to kill the ball because it's like batting practice almost. Everybody's popping it up, beating it into the dirt. We got one hit. Al Kloppen from Lake Mills is playing with us. He went on to become the football coach at Augsburg. And we thought, that's terrible. And by the way, the Kansas City Monarchs beat us. But later in the season, Charlie Finley, who coached the Kansas City, or managed, he owned the Kansas City Athletics, announced that he had signed Satchel Paige in September, when the rosters can be increased, to pitch for Kansas City. Now, Kansas City Athletics moved to Oakland. Then Kansas City got a new team, which was called the Royals. Back in the, I think, 60s. So anyway, he's going to pitch for the Kansas City Athletics. And they're playing the Boston Red Sox on a Saturday in September. And, of course, he announces this to get a big crowd. So Satchel goes out on the mound to face the Boston Red Sox, Carl Yastrzemski, and all those other wonderful players. And how did they do? Well, you can look this up in the record book. Satchel pitched three innings. They got one hit off him. All of a sudden, we didn't feel so bad. Oh, my.
That's a good story.
I got one more story I'll tell you then, and then I'm done. Unless you want to cut me off now.
No, of course not.
Okay. I was a good friend of Ned Garber. Ned played from 1948 to 61. Played for the St. Louis Browns, among other teams, Detroit Tigers and so forth. Great friend. I mean, he came and stayed with me a number of times here in Alden. In 1951, he was the 20-game winner. His team only won like 40-some games. Started the All-Star game, so forth. Anyway, he tells me this story about the midget, Eddie Goodell. You ever heard that story, Nate?
I have not.
Okay. Eddie Goodell was signed by... general manager, Bill Vick, and he was a great promoter. So he announces to the fans that there's going to be a big surprise, a big promotion coming up on this particular game. My friend Ned had pitched the first game of a doubleheader. He's telling me this firsthand. He was there. First game of the doubleheader, and nobody knew about this signing of this little Eddie Goodell. By the way, Eddie Goodell was a midget. He was about 3 feet 6 inches tall. And so Ned said, I was sitting up in the press box between games, waiting for the second game to start. Pretty soon they pulled this wagon out in the field and had a great big cake. He thought, hey, some pretty girl's going to jump out or something. Nope, out jumps this Eddie Goodell. He thought, oh, that's cute. They got a bat boy or something for this game, or a mascot or something. Nobody knew about it. So, okay, the game's going to start. And the normal center fielder didn't start. They sent the reserve out to center field to start the game. Okay, top of the first inning ended. Bottom of the first inning started. Well, here comes this little midget running out to the plate with a small bat. He gets in the batter's box, and the umpire says, hey, kid, get out of here. The game's going to start. He said, no, I'm batting. You can't bat. So he reaches in his back pocket, and he pulls out a signed contract by the president of the American League. Now, the president had no idea who Eddie Goodell was. He thought just another minor leaguer brought up. So the umpire says, okay, get in the batter's box. Now, Belbeck told this little Eddie Goodell, he said, you do not swing the bat. I've got a guy in the press box, and if you swing, he's going to shoot you. So Eddie Goodell gets in the batter's box knowing he's not going to swing. The pitcher is Bob Kane. He came halfway to home plate, and he's going to throw the ball underhand to him. And the umpire says, get back to that mound and pitch. And so 4 pitches later, he walks. Eddie Goodell's in a crouch even. No pitch came close. He trots to first base, and then out comes a regular center fielder, replaces him, and the game goes on. And immediately the president, when he found out about this ban to Eddie Goodell and anything like that, and they were more careful about who they okayed to sign a contract and play in games. But Ned was there, and he saw the whole thing, and he said we never saw much of that Eddie Goodell, the midget, after that. He's kind of disappeared. So that's an interesting story for your fans.
You got a whole lot of interesting stories, Neil, and yours is pretty good overall as well. We thank you again for taking some time to call in. It's really fun to talk to you. We might have to have you back on to tell a few more stories. I need to know how you met Ted Williams, too, but we'll save that for another day. Neil Pierce, joining us here on KATE 1450 again. Thank you again for the time, Neil. We really appreciate it. It's been fun talking to you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Nate. Thank you. Bye.
All right, thank you, Neil. I appreciate you taking the time again.
Yep, that's fun. Yeah, Tom knows most of my stories.
Well, again, like I said, we got plenty of time here and no sports coming on in the near future at least, so we might have to give you a call up again, tell a couple more of them.
Yeah, Tom's been over to meet Ned a couple times.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Tom's the guy who's been giving me most of these names to call people over and all that. Yeah,
we're pretty good buddies, so we do a lot of things together. We go to ball games together and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, Nate. Well, glad to help you out.
Of course. Thanks for the time. I'll let you know when we end up posting that online and after it airs and all
that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Very good.
All right. Bye.